This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? UltraMap's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, UltraMap editor Eric Sandlin. This is a show where I have a conversation with someone in the food world that I think you'll want to hear from. He is making his, I believe, third appearance on the show. He is the founder of St. Arnold Brewing Company. Rock Wagner, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Thanks for doing this. I mean, nominally, we're doing this because St. Arnold is getting ready to celebrate its 30th anniversary. So take me back to those early days. I mean, you're the oldest craft brewery in Texas. You were among the first craft breweries to open. What do you remember from those early days of trying to explain to people why they should be drinking St. Arnold instead of their Budweiser or Miller Lite or whatever it was that they were drinking back then?
I think what I remember most is how much harder it was to do it than I thought it was going to be, and how little people understood about craft beer. Like if you hang out with a bunch of homebrewers, which I did hang out with homebrewers, to some extent frequently, and they all had this deep knowledge of beer, and there was this handful of beer bars that I went to back in the day, the Ginger Man, the Ale House. Those were probably my two biggest regular bars that I went to. People there had this awareness of beer and beer styles from around the world. Back then those bars had mainly imports, a lot of British and Belgian and German beers. I didn't realize how little most people were aware that there was beer outside of Bud Miller Coors. And coming to people and handing them a bottle or a sample or a pint of amber ale, how they would look at it like, what is this? And wow, this is really bitter. I mean, if you think about amber ale today, I mean, it's kind of quaint. I mean, it's got this nice caramel malty body. It's got the IBUs are about 29. So it has sort of a balanced bitter. It is not an aggressively bitter beer. I can't tell you how many people would take a sip and this scrunch up their face and like, what did you just give me? So there was a ton of education that we had to do. And I spent a lot of time doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen other interviews with you or read articles. I mean, you were doing the like tastings in grocery stores, right? You personally were doing a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had no money. I mean, I was at Specs, I was at Kroger's, Randall's. I mean, I remember when Randall's went from dry to wet, because that was a big thing, because it used to be the most valuable real estate in a strip center was the space right next to the Randall's, because that would be the liquor store, because everybody shopped at Randall's and then they went to the liquor store next door to buy their beer and wine, and to some extent liquor, but really it was for beer and wine. And then those poor people were hung out to dry after Randall's realized, oh, they bought Tom Thumb up in Dallas and went, wow, you make a lot of money selling beer and wine. And
yeah, our Our Christian values are not as important to us now that we understand how much money we could be making.
Exactly. But yeah, no, I was personally doing them, and I figured out when the best hours were to be in those stores, because there's nothing worse than doing a tasting in the store for 3 hours and two people come by and you don't sell any six packs.
All right, so when did you start to feel like maybe this was going to work?
So I would say it was sort of around the 2004 to 2008 period. My joke has always been after 12 years, we were an overnight success. If you go back and look, our growth really started in 2003. Like we got up pretty quickly to about 5,000 barrels in our first 3 years, and then we just hung there for about 5 years. We started to grow in 2003, and we went on a streak where we were growing 23% year over year over a period of about 12 years. But you don't feel that growth when it first starts. I mean, 20% growth on a small number is not that big of growth. But when it just kind of keeps going, by 2008, I was feeling like we were hitting a critical mass. And that was also the time that I realized that we were going to outgrow our original facility, the warehouse that we rented out near 290 and 34th Street, and started looking for real estate to move to and to actually purchase. And that's what led us to our current home. And I worked very hard at building a financial model where we would not have to grow to pay for our new facility, which is, I think, a different mindset than a lot of brewers had in the 2014 to 2019 period, where people were spending extravagantly to build a new place and they had to grow to pay for it. And we've seen that now start to bite a lot of people in the butt.
Right. That idea of, oh, well, as long as we keep growing 20% every year, we can afford this massive brewery. We'll be making in 3 years, we'll be making enough revenue to pay for this fancy new place. It's a dangerous game.
Yeah, we spent my initial budget was $5.5 million to build this place, and that included buying the land. The budget ran up to it cost us $7.5 million, and while we were having those $2 million of cost overruns, I can't tell you how stressed I was. I was sure I was killing the brewery, but I feel so good about it especially when I saw other breweries starting kind of 5 years later and on spending $20 to $40 million on their projects to do basically the same thing. Now, a lot of those breweries since had to, sold to private equity or got bought by another larger international brewery or something like that because they had to.
Right. I mean, talk about opening the downtown, like making the move to downtown and opening that brewery, because I remember when did that happen? Because I remember when it opened.
So we started doing tours in December of 2009, but we actually started production March 1st of 2010. So we've been here now for 14 years.
Yeah, I mean it. And then you obviously you expanded the campus with the beer hall and restaurant once you were allowed to sell people individual beers.
Yeah, that was the next big move, was when we got the law changed in 2013 so that we could sell beer directly to our customers, which it's pretty amazing when you realize for the first 19 years that we were open, we gave away all the beer to everybody who came and visited us. Now, we got a little creative starting in 2006 of like charging people $5 for the tour. But yeah, the first 19 years, we were giving away beer, which is a lousy business model. In 2013, when we got the law changed so that we could sell beer for on-premise consumption, which was something I never thought was actually going to happen. That's when we tried to buy the land across the street. We succeeded in that. It was the tow lot. Then we had to buy the land, the street from the city, which who knew you could do that, but we succeeded at that. And then finally we built the beer garden when that opened in 2018.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember when you first started doing food at the brewery, and it was like, oh, it was this kind of fun little side hustle with Chef Ryan. And then when the restaurant opened, it was like, okay, now it's a serious business. Now it needs to justify itself apart from, just being tasty to eat while you're drinking a beer.
When we opened the beer hall and the kitchen originally in 2013, here on the second floor, I had this very idealistic concept of creating this unique beer culture here in Houston, where people came together, ate family style. You could order whatever you wanted as long as that you ordered the dish that we were making that day, because it was only one dish. And it changed every day. And it turned out that was a terrible business model. That's not what people want. And you have ultimately have to give people what they want. But beer culture is, I think, one of the things that we focus on, and one of the things that I feel will make us relevant 30 years from today. So that was sort of my attempt to create that with our beer hall. And it didn't really work that way. And we started having like a regular menu. But again, we weren't really, we were always doing things kind of backwards. We'd already set up a business model where people were having events in the evening. So we could only do lunch service. And not that many people really want to go out and order a big lunch and drink a lot of beer at lunch, which I get. I don't drink a lot of
Right.
beer.
You mentioned creating a community at St. Arnold, and I would say one of the ways you've done that is with events, right? The One Pot Showdown, the cycling team, the printing event. I mean, talk about kind of creating that, like building that community and using those events to kind of build the, as you call it, the St. Arnold Army.
To me, beer is all about community. And if you look at the history of beer, it has been something that brings people together, and breweries tend to be communal gathering places. You go to Europe and you see that frequently. And when we started off, I mean, that was part of our mission statement from the get-go. And we also felt like it was good from a marketing standpoint because it's a good way to reach people and bring people to the brewery. It is something that I feel like we continue to do really well. Lenny has developed so many deep relationships with the community here, Lenny being our CMO. And we do the things, we get involved in the things that we actually believe in and that we enjoy doing. And then I feel like that makes it more fun for us. We do it better. And I always hate to ever utter the word authentic, because typically the second somebody says authentic, they're not. But I feel like you get that feeling of authenticity because we're doing it because we actually enjoy it. Nobody's having to fake that it's what we're actually about. And I think our involvement in the community, be it, as you said, just mentioned the MS150, which we just had this past weekend, and the print show, which was a couple of weeks ago, the art car parade. There's so many things that we're involved in, and we actually enjoy them. I mean, the Astros, tailgating at Texans games, those are all things that we do because we enjoy it.
Right. Well, you were just the Grand Marshal of the Art Car Parade. So let me ask you, like, how did you first become involved with that event, and what was it like to be the Grand Marshal?
So we first became involved right after the brewery opened. The art car artists, we started donating beer to the art car artists, to Orange Show events, and the art car ball. And in 1999, I decided that I wanted to do our own art car. And I got this wild hair and found this 1957 Bentley that was a guy was selling a memorial. And I saw it in the classic section, classic cars section of the Chronicle, back when we actually looked at classifieds in the Chronicle. And I went out there and looked at it. The car was beautiful. I mean, it was cheaper than a Honda. yet it was just gorgeous, and it was in great condition. I was like, we have to tie dye this. And me and one of my coworkers here, James Cunningham, he was more artistically talented than I was. We figured out how to do tie dye, and thus the tie dyed Bentley was born. And that's when we started rolling in the parade, and you know, we were already involved with the Orange Show, but when you become more involved, like doing something in the parade, then you get even more excited about finding new ways to support the organization. And they're excited to have us because clearly we get the spirit of who they are and what it's about. So I feel like it builds and you become better partners. And thus those things are born. And then, so I was completely shocked when they invited me to be the Grand Marshal this year. But it was a hoot. I had a great fun, you know, doing the Main Street drag beforehand and trying to get the word out about the parade. To me, if you live in Houston and you haven't gone to the Art Car Parade, you need to get your ass out there and go see it, because it is so much fun and so wonderful and so uniquely Houston. I argue that Houston is much weirder than Austin is. Austin just claims to be weird. We are, and we don't talk about it.
Yeah, no, we keep our weirdness. We're less ostentatious in our weirdness.
Yes.
All right. So you're celebrating your 30th anniversary with a big concert and an all day festival. How involved do you get in like the planning of these things? Like how much is it just you tell Lenny and whoever to kind of do what they do, and how much of it do you have a hand in?
I do very little in the planning of events these days, and that's a wonderful thing. I mean, I think the most amazing thing about St. Arnold is our team. I tell people the most important thing that we do is hire. When we hire people, we always want to find people who get who we are very high quality and believe in our mission and love craft beer. And hopefully more than just love craft beer, really love St. Arnold and what we do. And I think an example of that is our events. I get asked at the very beginning, kind of, what level of event do we want to do? Do we want to really have an elevated event? Do we want to do the music? And then Lenny really, in that case, in this particular case, takes it from there. The idea of having the Houston Supergroup was really his baby. And then Cam Franklin, I think she's kind of been the glue who, she bought into the idea and is now making sure, working with all the other artists to bring everybody together. So it takes a lot of many people to believe in what you're trying to do to pull something like this off. But I mean, it's not just Lenny or me either. I mean, we have a very deep team here that helps put all these things together.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be quite a party with Cam Franklin and Robert Ellis and Devin the Dude and Fat Tony. It's going to be quite a bash.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. The 5 year, I mean, I always have fun at the anniversary parties, but the 5 year anniversary parties, they're special. And I think there's something very special about 30 years to me. And this is going to sound odd, but when you're starting on an endeavor, you think about, where am I going to be in 5 years, 10 years, 20, maybe you say 25. I never once thought, where am I going to be in 30 years? So it's sort of like, this is the first one that's kind of uncharted territory. When I was 29, I did not think, where am I going to be when I'm 59? That's just like unfathomable. That's just old. And so I get, you know, one of the things I'm very thankful for my team for is I come to these events and I have no responsibilities. I just come and I have a great time. And I will be Ubering here and back home.
Yes, I think that's a wise choice. But also, I mean, people love you at these events. I mean, I went to the Feast of St. Arnold a few months ago and you showed up and everybody wants to say hi and get a picture and talk to you. That's got to feel pretty good, right?
Oh, it does. It's great. I mean, and I see people who have been customers of ours for close to 30 years and, you know, seeing the enthusiasm of our customers also makes you realize that the company is much more than just the beers, the campus, the people who work here. It's also the community. It's our customers. It's everybody who has made St. Arnold who we are today. So yeah, it's fun. And I love talking to people and, you know, taking lots of photos and seeing people that I haven't seen for a long time. Cause people do come out to these anniversaries. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen you for, you know, 5 years or 10 years. So.
Right. And now they bring their kids, right? You know, someone who started drinking with you 30 years ago, they could have kids that are old enough to drink your beer now.
Well, absolutely. And we do see that. You know, and a lot of people who say, yeah, I used to just drink, I was only allowed to drink your root beer. And now I get to drink your beer. The other funny conversation is when people start telling you how they started drinking your beer and you realize you're doing the math. It's like, okay, you weren't 21 yet. And they're like, as long as you're doing it at home when your parents were giving it to you, that's cool.
Yeah, as long as you didn't sell it to them, I think that's outside of your realm of responsibility.
Exactly. And we are very good about enforcing that.
Absolutely. All right. So talk to me about kind of the current state of the brewery. I mean, you know, I know you rolled out Grand Prize, a new lager earlier this year. Like, how is the business of St. Arnold?
So business of St. Arnold is really good. And I feel very fortunate to say that because beer and craft beer as a whole are facing a lot of headwinds right now. You know, overall, the total volume has gone down some for the entire beer segment. But we're up about 5% so far this year and showing no signs of slowing down. Grand Prize has been well received. Our Shandy has been a surprise hit. I mean, we all loved it, but I had no idea what the reaction in the market was going to be. And so far, we're having a tough time keeping up with it. You know, Art Car has been out now for 9 years. Next year will be the 10th anniversary for Art Car, and it continues to grow. And these days, seeing beers, brands that have been around for that long, I mean, it has never had a down year. It just keeps going up. So everything's been going really well. You know, a lot of beers, there continues to be kind of like a cycle where you see beers like Double Down and you know, Juicy IPA maybe are seeing some declines, but then our new beers come out and more than make up for that. Another interesting little tidbit is Amber Ale, which for years has kind of been declining, you know, 5%, 4% a year. It's actually up this year. So after 30 years, Amber Ale is chugging along.
Yeah, everything old is new again, right? Like it's making a comeback.
Yeah, maybe those dad beers are cool now.
I mean, what, like, right? Because there's things that have come and gone, right? The Alyssa, the IPA is,
it's still going, but it's much smaller today than it used to be.
Right. And there was the raspberry Berliner Weisse, right? I think that's
raspberry AF. That was delicious. That's gone. And we had low dose. I mean, we have a whole shelf of retired beers. People do ask us, like Santo is a great example of one that people constantly ask us, when do you bring Santo back? Or why did you stop brewing Santo? Why did you discontinue it? It's like, well, we discontinued it because you stopped buying it. If you buy it, we'll keep brewing it. But the way the business works, once the volume gets down below a certain level, then the stores start taking it out of their shelf, off their shelves and out of their sets. And once there aren't enough placements to justify brewing a batch every 3 months, then that beer gets discontinued. So I love all of the beers. I'd love to see them all go forever, but they don't.
I mean, you guys haven't done a Bishop's Barrel release in a while, have you?
We haven't. You know, we do barrel-aged beers now, but we give them different names. Well, we have our anniversary, 30th anniversary beer is going to be barrel-aged. You know, we do barrel-aged Pumpkinator and French Press, but we've retired the Bishop's Barrel name. We now have a small pilot system. It's a 3.5-barrel brew house that's letting us do some special releases and play around with some special small batch beers. And you will probably see more barrel aged beers coming out off of that. And I suspect at some point or another, you will see the Bishop Barrel name get used again, just like you'll see Divine Reserve come out again at some point.
You know, the other thing, I know you guys had a brief moment with seltzers that didn't last very long. Is that just not what people wanted from you?
Yeah. Well, I think seltzers, White Claw is doing well, but in the world of seltzer, pretty much no other seltzers are doing well right now. White Claw is actually growing again after having a couple years of decline. But yeah, we researched how to make seltzer. First, we resisted it. Then we're like, okay, this looks like it might be something that we have to do to stay relevant. We did it the St. Arnold way. We brewed our own base. We used only real fruit puree. We came up with this great label design, super fine. I thought we did everything just really well. Came out with a product that tasted really good, and it died before it ever got launched. I mean, it came out and the reception was horrible for it. So, but I think a lot of that was just the timing. It was, if we'd come out a couple years earlier, I think we would have caught the wave going up. But in some ways, I think that would have been worse, because I think we would have invested more time and effort. And then I still think it would have gone down, because yeah, I don't think a craft beer drinker wants to drink seltzer. I don't want to drink seltzer. I thought we came out with the best seltzer on the market. And at the end of the day, I was still like, I'd like a beer. Give me a lawnmower, please.
Yeah, right. As long as there's like a light, crispy pilsner or something like a lawnmower, I'm good. You know, like I don't need a seltzer. I'm not super calorie conscious. It doesn't.
Yeah. And if I want something that tastes more like it's a mixed drink, then I probably want to go have a cocktail.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, you mentioned that the brewery scene has seen some headwinds, and we've certainly seen any number of closings and breweries changing ownership. And, you know, you kind of predicted that, I think, the last time you were on the show, which was at these, you know, kind of coming out of the pandemic, these medium-sized breweries were gonna struggle because they were losing shelf space to all of these ready-to-drink cocktails and seltzers and everything else. So what do you kind of make of the current state of craft beer, especially for Houston breweries that are still kind of in the midst of all this shuffling around?
Well, I think it's going to be a mixed bag. I think what you're going to see is the breweries that make really good beer and that focus on tap room experience, I think they're going to be just fine. People like to go to breweries to drink beer. Breweries that focus on distribution as a significant part of their business, a lot of them are probably going to face some challenges, but there are some that are winning also. I think the key for breweries is to continue to focus on brewing high quality beer that tastes good after sitting on the shelf for a month or so, because that's really hard to do for a lot of these small breweries. And then, you know, be very fiscally responsible and wait for the cycle to change and for craft beer to start going up again, because craft beer is going to be cyclical. That's one of the things that I think people didn't realize, because the only thing that people experience, if you opened a brewery in 2010, you only experienced phenomenal growth, and you didn't even have to be that good of a businessman or a brewer to experience that kind of growth. So you probably thought that you were a genius and knew everything about everything. And now it's a little humbling for people, and the market has changed. It's much more challenging. We're seeing kind of the first down cycle that craft beer has experienced. Although I would argue that we saw one around 1996 also, but most people haven't been around that long. So you just need to position yourself well for when, you know, maybe in a couple of years craft beer starts growing again, so that you can take advantage of that. But in the meantime, there will probably be some more closures, but there will probably also be some more breweries that open up. So, I mean, for years, we were basically the only brewery in Houston, craft brewery, and, you know, maybe there are a couple little brew pubs here and there that opened and then closed. Today, there's like 50 craft breweries in Houston. So even if, you know, five close, it's still incredibly healthy right now. And I think there's a great community of brewers here.
You know, I was at Bad Astronaut a few weeks ago. They were doing they had a whole market going on with the food pop-up and a breakdancing contest. And I thought, you know, this is kind of what Brock talks about, right? Like, build a community, yep, give people absolutely a reason to come to your brewery. Like, I thought they were doing a really good job.
Yeah, I you know, they brew good beers. So yeah, I think that they are doing a good job, and they're right here in the neighborhood too.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think? The other one that we reported last week about True Anomaly just bought a big piece of property in the East End, and they're going to move to that facility over the next few months. I mean, who else do you think is doing like a good job, that's doing things the right way and is in it for the long haul?
I mean, I think True Anomaly is certainly, they brew really good beers, and, you know, they've won some nice awards. So I think they're an excellent example of somebody else who's doing it well. Yeah, I think you could point to somebody like No Label and Katie that has created a big beer garden experience, and there's kind of nothing else like them in Katie. So they have become, you know, their distribution business has gone to pretty much nothing. But their experience of going there to the beer garden, to the brewery to visit, you know, it's a big gathering spot in Katy. And I think, you know, that's keeping them going and keeping them healthy.
I mean, breweries that I thought were staples that were going to be around for a long time. Talk about spending a lot of money on a facility. Certainly Buffalo Bayou did that. Or, you know, I remember when Eighth Wonder got going and they got sold to a cannabis company. It's been really something to kind of watch these businesses that I thought were staples just kind of either go away or fundamentally change their business model.
Yeah. And yeah, I have the advantage of, you know, we buy market data for like grocery store sales. So we see how we're doing in the grocery store and how that compares with all the other brands in the stores. And so we've been seeing those numbers and seeing the steep declines of some of the brands that you just mentioned. So I can't say that we were surprised to see those moves. Like with Buffalo Bayou, I think that the only surprise was that it hadn't happened sooner. But theirs was probably an example of self-inflicted wounds, more than anything else. I would put that is the cause much more than market conditions.
You know, the other thing you talked about the last time you were on the show was that you guys were testing some whiskey and some distilled spirits. I don't feel like I've heard much about it since then. So let me just ask you, are you still doing that, or is that experiment kind of faded away?
So we still have those barrels aging. They're sitting over at Gulf Coast Distilling. Some point we need to repatriate them here. Our brewing business has been growing at such a healthy pace that we've really felt like we needed to be focusing on that. And so we've pulled back from the whiskey and distilling experiment. It is something that I would still enjoy doing long-term. You know, we also have run into just some, you know, just technical issues or business issues, like insurance companies don't like you sticking barrels of flammable whiskey inside your building. So it would cause our total insurance costs to go up. So it's like, okay, well, if we're going to do that, then we need to have kind of a separate building someplace else. That really makes it a whole lot more expensive. And that wasn't what I was part of what I was thinking that we were going to do. So I would say that spirits is something that I'm still interested in. There have been so many spirits companies that have opened, and kind of like some of the craft brewers, a lot of the craft distillers are also struggling. So that might be one of those things where we kind of keep our eye out for an opportunity, a strategic opportunity out there at some point in the future. But I would still love to be laying down some barrels of whiskey for aging. As I mentioned, we've pulled back from that, but something that I could maybe drink when I'm 70 years old. It's a hell of a long game when you're looking at making whiskey.
Yeah, most of my favorite whiskeys tend to be somewhere between 12 and 18 years old. So you gotta invest for the long haul.
Right. Yeah, I should have been thinking about that when, you know, 30 years ago.
That's right. If you had thought about that in 2000, we could be drinking, you know, 20-year-old St. Arnold bourbon to celebrate this anniversary. How much fun would that have been?
Oh, that sounds like a drunk and a real headache. but I'd be up for it.
Yeah. I mean, but what do you think about as kind of what's next? I mean, you know, 30 years is an awfully long time, but maybe in the next 5 or 10, I mean, I look at that brewery and I think it's so successful and people have so much fun at the tap room. Like, would you build another one somewhere? Would you go up to the Woodlands or out to Katy and try your luck out there?
You know, those are things that we have certainly talked about and we're open to, and whether it's someplace else in the greater Houston area, whether it's in, you know, Dallas or Austin or San Antonio. I think having another beer garden would be something that we would enjoy doing. And I think it would, from a marketing standpoint, I think it would help us, especially if you go out to another city, because without a brick and mortar facility, it's much harder to create that sense of community. And so I think that is what appeals the most to me about having another location. We haven't found kind of the perfect situation. And for me, one of the things is I have to own the real estate in order to do it. But it is something that I suspect 10 years from now, we probably do have a location someplace else. I just don't know where that might be. And, you know, we kind of watch how the market's developing and what makes the most sense. And, you know, our thoughts on that sort of evolve on a probably quarterly basis.
I mean, do you have any other plans to expand the campus? I mean, I know, for example, Stone has a hotel, right? Do you aspire for, like, I don't even know what it would be, but like another facility somewhere on the property that would kind of extend the experience?
We've thought about things like that. We have, you know, we do have a couple pieces of land right around here that we've bought and just used for parking or something. we tried to buy the land, the buildings where Meow Wolf is going in. And if we had succeeded at that, then I think, yes, we would have been maybe looking at something like that. But honestly, we are doing everything that I ever set out to do when we started the brewery 30 years ago. I mean, it has exceeded all of my expectations. I don't personally necessarily feel like I have to do something more. But we also have a very talented and deep team. And, you know, everybody here is looking for more challenges. So I suspect at some point we do take on a new challenge, albeit a, you know, whether it's a beer garden or a production facility in another market, distilling, hotel. Hotel probably isn't at the top of my list, but it has it has crossed my mind.
And they're a lot of work, right? I mean, that's a big commitment because it's, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You never get a break from it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to some extent, it's a little bit like when we opened the beer garden. Before opening the beer garden, I felt like I could say I could do anybody's job here. I might not do it as well as them. I might be a little rusty, but I had done that job at some point in the history of the brewery. When we opened the beer garden, that was a black box. How a kitchen operates, how a restaurant operates, that was really all new to me. And I watch what people do in the kitchen, and I am in awe of that team. I don't know how they do what they do. I love to cook at home, and cooking in a kitchen is a totally different skill set.
Well, I do have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to discuss?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. I can't think of anything. We kind of talked about, you know, the 30th anniversary and, you know, the just it being a fun celebration, and something I never anticipated actually getting to. You know, the 30th anniversary beer is going to be an imperial stout aged in barrels and different types of barrels blended together. That's going to be Ooh. Fun to drink when that's done. That'll be coming out. We only have a small amount of it. It'll be available for sale right before the anniversary party. But now I just hope to see you out here, and whether it's at the anniversary party or for a lunch sometime soon.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been invited to the anniversary party. I certainly look forward to coming for at least a little bit. Like you, I will be Ubering just because I'm terrified of trying to park anywhere near the brewery on that day. I think ride share is going to be the way to go.
Oh yeah, the parking is going to be very tight. So yes, I definitely suggest ride share for the event for multiple reasons.
Well, Brock Wagner, I don't know that anyone needs the website and the social media for St. Arnold, but give us the website and the social media for St. Arnold.
It is starnold.com. You always have to remember to spell it out. starnold.com. And I think, what is our social media? I think it's St. Arnold Brewing, because we're not brewery, it's brewing.
Yes, St. Arnold Brewing on Instagram.
Yeah, I don't think about those things.
You don't have to. You pay people for that. You don't have to anymore.
Yeah, and we have a great team on that front too.
Brock, this was a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Cheers.
Cheers. You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Did I put the clothes in the dryer?
I hope they don't think I was
sneaking. I need to be awake.
Snacks.
I have my brain shut off.
Just sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise. There's a whole rainbow of color noises. and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better, like the Green Noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Did I put the clothes in the dryer?
I hope they don't think I was
serious. I need to be
awake.
Snacks. I have my brain shut
off.
Just sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise, but there's a whole rainbow of color noises, and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better. Like the green noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.